So I was sitting on a train. This train was, in fact, yes, maybe Frank Sinatra's car. You should definitely sit
not
here.
Not anymore.
Because
Doug Aiken's car. It's with Jorge Prado seating with seat covers.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's Thurston Moore. He's probably in the right side of your headphone right now. And Doug Aiken is creator of art. And you brought Thurston Moore onto this train and onto the stage. And so I think we start with just where, what is it about, let's say, Thurston?
I'm on the left side of your head.
See? And if not, you can just reverse your earbuds, and it, like, this is perfect. And you're
left side of my
and
head. You, that's you, a good solo album. Well.
Reverse your earbuds?
And we're heading to Chicago. We've just left Pittsburgh. We're on a train that is about to pull into Chicago. This gorgeous car, 1948, I think this car was made, part of a monster art project called Station to Station that's traveling the entire country, filled with artists, people who do fabrics, people who do music, people who do, just name it, architecture, and it's just a whirlwind, and we'll tell you more about that another time. But what I want to talk about now is that one of the most important things that seemed to revolve around Station to Station as it hits every city, and in this train car, music is being made. Music is important to you, Doug Aiken, as a, what is it that you love about what he does?
I think Thurston creates sonic landscapes, you know, and that's very much what Station to Station is about. It's about a kind of space for empowerment, you know, a space for empowerment for the creator. And, you know, it's interesting, a minute or so ago, we were talking about this idea of the rhythm of the train, and as we're on this, you know, there's a kind of ever-changing beat per minute, you know, a kind of rhythm that you feel. And, you know, the idea of creating art while this is in motion, for me, is a really compelling one.
And for you, you were making music the first day on the train. That was Sunday, heading from Pittsburgh.
When
to...
we first got on here Sunday, we John Maloney, who's with me here, he plays drums and I play guitar. We jammed out with Ariel Pink and his crew. Yeah, we just went for it, and it was kind of cool because Ariel Pink comes from this kind of West Coast LA thing that I really like. It's really sort of investigations into like real heavy psychedelic kind of just like jam territory,
and
not
that's
like
what
jam,
you
not
told-
that jam band style, but just really sort of like really overamped head rush psychedelia kind of like guitar playing, and kind of like really sort of pronounced technique playing too, more so than I have. I'm more idiosyncratic, I think, and so I wasn't even aware exactly who was playing what. I just sort of plugged in a guitar, and John sat down at the drums. We're definitely more East Coast sensibility. He's like, she's straight up Boston, I'm straight up New York, and we kind of, you know, there's a, that Boston New York rivalry is as intense as it may seem, we actually do love each other. So, you know, in a way, it's kind of cool. There's like there's that friction, and so, but we just sort of jumped into the fray of those guys were already jamming, and they were obviously, and I heard this real sort of like a certain kind of like West Coast aesthetic being laid down, like which you know, I did.
If you could define that, I mean, what would
well,
you,
I think it's a little more has more to do with kind of like kind of more classicist kind of playing, you know what I'm saying? Like real classic kind of psychedelia. Whereas I think where we're coming from is possibly more kind of like I said before, idiosyncratic or unschooled. It was kind of heads down, just sort of like freak out playing, and we did that really at.
Was it inspired at all by the motion of the
I
train
it,
in any
it,
way? Because at some point it was so loud you couldn't
well,
hear
yeah,
the train,
it was
but
inspired
it started
by
right?
the excitement of all being together in like this like enclosed space,
right.
And like barreling down the tracks, and then it's like what else are you gonna do? You know? And you have all these goodies at your disposal, like amplifiers and like little Moog pedals and
right.
and you know there's all this stuff, and we just plugged in and bugged out. You know, it was definitely kind of super free. But today, John and I actually, the two of us just plugged in, and it was a little more conscientious about like writing a song. And we wrote a song, and it was definitely inspired by the environment of being on this train and the visual rush of what was going on outdoors, the sounds that we're hearing from these trains, sounds that are just like that we adore, you know, like the rumbles that you're hearing now, the high pitches of the scree that's going by, the whistles, and that really sort of fit into what we were doing, particularly rhythmically what we were doing, because we were just like, you know, we were energized by it.
And are you, did you grow up in the city?
at all?
I grew up in Los Angeles, uh-huh. Yeah.
Because a lot of times when I hear the description you made could easily apply to opening your apartment window in a city where you can be inspired by the city hum that goes on day to day. And I just wondered if there was some... Like, that's the attraction of me as an electronic musician, as a synth player. Always been attracted to just that hum that's ongoing in a city and unconsciously remake that sound in some way, shape, or form, or make sound that fits on top of the sound that's always there. It's just never, ever quiet, right? And I just wondered if that was maybe some of your attraction to the music you love. Do you think there's any connection between the noise of the city and the sorts of music you like? And then it'd probably be good to tell me a tune that you really can remember early on in your life. Either you scraped your money together with and bought your first record, or maybe the first record that really changed you in your life. And
yeah, records for me, like they just arrived one day. It was really strange. Like I was really young. It was hot. It was summertime, and there was asphalt street out in front of our house. And I walked out there one day, and there were just records all the way down the street. And
what do you
mean? Record albums, records, broken records, shattered records. Some of them are okay. And there was about like 20 or 30 records that someone had just thrown out the window of a Camaro. And they were all over the place. And I just kind of walked out there, and I was this really young, small kid. And I just started...
Age?
8 or 10 or something. And I just started picking them up and putting them in their sleeves and taking them back to my house in my bedroom. And, you know, I had no brothers or sisters. I didn't know anything about...
So some guy in a Camaro completely changed your life.
Well, it was you know, it was this kind of divine intervention.
Yeah, right.
You know, it just kind of landed there. And, you know, as I'm putting them back in, it's, you know, it's whatever. It's like, you know, Led Zeppelin 4 and Black Sabbath and, you know, all these different kind of albums. I had no real access
to. They could have sucked.
I mean,
they could have been really lousy records.
Well, some of them were really lousy, you know, but even the lousy ones, the album covers were fantastic.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it was this kind of, you know, it was like a intervention. Like, it was like the Red Cross kind of like dropped
so
a package
fabulous.
To save me, you know, and.
It's a great project.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. And then these other, you know, I had these other kind of strange moments when I was, you know, a similar age, even younger. Igor Stravinsky visited our neighbors next door, and my dad took me over to meet him. So it's just this kind of, all these weird kind of encounters with music, and for me it's just always been there. It's like I've never really thought of it. It's just kind of there constantly. You're tuning in to something else always.
Think of one song that, like, in that pile of stuff from the Camaro that you still hold on to, that you still adore, that you still think maybe changed you.
Oh, that's a hard one. It could be embarrassing.
That's good. Embarrassing's
well,
good.
Well, you know,
we all start somewhere.
Yeah, it's true. You know, how can you get a Ted Nugent's Cat Scratch Fever out of your head? And that was definitely one.
Oh,
of the
man,
records.
I thought I had until now.
And I mean, that was definitely one of the albums I picked up.
Uh huh. And would there be another if you want to go for choice two?
Planet Caravan by Black Sabbath is like such a delicate song from such a surprising place.
Was that a record for you too?
Planet Caravan by Black Sabbath. I didn't even know
song.
That. I don't. What record is that on?
It's on Paranoid. I think.
It's on Paranoid.
It's
Planet
really,
Caravan.
Yeah, it's a really atmospheric.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kind of atmospheric ambient track.
Like eyes, the black night sky.
always into album covers before the albums themselves.
I always bought my records mostly bought my records by cover.
Yeah. I mean, I was always attracted to records because they kind of were these portals into like these other worlds, obviously. I mean, I always like the individuals or the bands who were making the records, the more otherworldly they were, the more kind of like attractive that was to me. These kind of marginalized kind of aliens in society, like actually making art, like, you know, they made something that was just like out there, you know, to be accessed.
Can you remember?
When I see images of like, I remember early on in the early 70s, I was 20 in 78, so I think in the early 70s I was a young teen, but I mean, just seeing the first images I saw like in Cream magazine of like Iggy Pop, you know, Iggy and the Stooges.
Yeah.
And, you know, the spray painted silver and sort of like walking on top of the hands of the audience. I was like, who's that? Like, what does that sound like? I need to know what he sounds like. So, I mean, finding Raw Power, like seeing that in the store and seeing that record Raw Power, I was like, oh, there he is. You know, that great Mick Rock photo of him just sort of staring into the void, or, you know, and it's just like, what is up with this guy? I even took that record cover to the Iron Butterfly hairdresser that everybody went to in my town. And I said, like, I want my hair cut like this. And they were like, well, that's nothing. You know, that's not a haircut. I was like, well, I don't care. I want my hair cut like this. And still, I walked out of there looking like Travolta.
That's awesome. So let's play something off of Raw Power.
Yeah, but you get to choose your songs, Thurston. I just get stuck with a box that landed on my street.
Well, I felt embarrassed. I don't know that last Black Sabbath song from Paran.
Yeah, but but
the first song on Raw Power was Search and Destroy.
Yeah,
and like, you know, when a singer comes out and says, I'm a streetwalking cheetah with a heart full of napalm, I'm the runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb, I'm the world's forgotten boy.
You're listening.
Search and Destroy. I was just like, oh my God.
Cheetah with a heart full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb. I am a world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Somebody gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Technology ain't got time to make no apology. So radiation in the dead of night, love in the middle of a firefight. Searching to destroy. And honey, I'm the world's forgotten boy, the one who's searching only to destroy.
Hey! We were riding this train from D.C. to Pittsburgh, and this train has strips of six long, you can describe this better than I will, but LEDs that change and alter, you can, with sound, and one of the things, it's certainly motion, and there are all sorts of colors, and the colors were falling on the leaves and the mountains, and it was so beautiful, and I imagined this, like, lone camper, like, out in the woods, you know, getting away from civilization, and here he, all of a sudden, this thing, this beautiful light and color falls all over the trees. And when you were telling your story about the Camaro, it reminded me of my imaginary camper. Like, something just out of nowhere comes and changes you. And I think that's sort of something that you do. I saw last night a couple that had to be 83 or 84 listening to No Age. And I thought, wow, you come to something, you don't know what it is, and something, hopefully something, happens and changes you, affects you, sends you down some path.
Well, I think the word you just used, happening, you know, we should really talk about.
Okay. And,
you know, really, you know, Station to Station is a series of happenings that kind of go across the landscape. What I mean by that, what is a happening? A happening is a moment in time that is not choreographed, where you don't know precisely what's going on, you know, where there's aspects of different layers of culture. There might be music, Thurston, John next to me. There might be something that's moving image based, or something that's performative, or something else that's even edible, you know. And I think we're looking at creating these moments to kind of, you know, allow all these aspects of culture to come together and create friction for like that period in time, and you're part of it, and you're inside it. You're not a voyeur, you know. And I think this project, I wanted to make something that was
even
really
when you say you're not a voyeur, it's like, are you thinking like as a person who goes to a concert and they watch and passively do this thing, or maybe they clap, but not much more than that. But when, for example, when the moment came where two auctioneers came out and started doing something completely, I mean, it's hard to say I've ever heard anything like that before. I've heard an auctioneer, but I've never heard one who had a very gospel-y voice and one who had a different kind of rhythm. And then the whip guy playing, there was a man with a whip who created rhythms with the whip that worked alongside and punctuated the auctioneering. And all of a sudden, it wasn't passive at all, even though we're still watching as an audience. It was so much more engaging, and so much more happened inside of me. And I trust anybody who's never seen anything like that. It just changes you. And it's also in the middle of the... You're no longer staring at the stage. You're now... It's happening around you. These auctioneers came from behind you with flashlights in their faces. And it's a surprise.
Yeah, that's really what we're after with this project. You know, this project, you know, as we sit here on this train, kind of moving through rural Illinois, we're going to a destination, but that's not the end. It'll keep changing and keep changing. Thurston and John are here now. They'll be playing tomorrow night, and then they're moving on to something else. And, you know, we'll be joined by Mavis Staples tomorrow night. You know, and it's those kinds of juxtapositions for me that I find so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this kind of idea that we don't need these kind of categories or these classifications, that we're really, you know, we're all at the same table. It's a wood table, and we're talking. And these conversations range from cinema to literature to art to music and anything else, anything, whatever you've got, you know. And I think this project is really, you know, it's about kind of, you know, looking at a space that has maybe less borders and less classification. I think the structure of the project is really about the sense of nomadicism, a sense of kind of constant
change. I keep hearing that word nomadic, and I'm trying to, I still have not connected it in the way I always think of a nomadic culture or tribe or whatever. So help me with that word some.
Well, I think I think Station to Station is a nomadic project in the sense that, you know, not only in a literal sense is it traveling by train from place to place. Some of these places are New York City or Los Angeles, but some of these places are rather off-the-grid places. But at the same time, we really believe in this idea that it's a platform to be shared, mm-hmm. and that different people are kind of coming on board or being part of the happenings. And, you know, I'm sitting here with Thurston, and, you know, Thurston's music I you know, grew up listening to and loving. You know, at the same time, we're sharing this project with Giorgio Moroder in the Southwest Desert. And Giorgio is going to turn the train that we're on right now into a recording device. And he wants to make a landscape recording, a kind of composition out of the sound of the landscape around him and the train's motion. You know, so radically different approaches, you know. And I think someone like Giorgio, you know, I mean, he is 72 and came to me with this idea. And, you know, he's probably never had an option to do something like this, you know, and that sense of empowerment, that sense of artistic empowerment for me is really, really what I believe in and what I hope can be what comes out of this, that idea of sharing, and also at the same time kind of bringing the viewer in to a sense of true exchange, not simply watching.
And the imagery that played behind your music, Thurston, was extraordinary, and I love what music does to visuals and what visuals does to the music.
There's a lot of chance interplay there, and which is some, there's a certain beauty in that.
Would you describe the imagery that happens behind you?
Well, the imagery behind me was the first time that I was aware of it, and I had no idea what was going to happen. And so, for me, it was just like trusting in the...
And for John, too, your drummer,
yeah.
who's
it was just like trusting sort of like whatever, that magic of interplay, and, yeah. and you know, it was kind of a dance.
Did it affect how you play? Did it I mean, you were aware of it.
If it did, it was very subconsciously an effect.
Uh-huh.
You know, no, I wasn't like looking at the screen and sort you know, taking cues.
Have you ever tried to do that?
Well, when you score film, you kind of have to do that. But no, I mean, I've done. I like to do performances where I'll have visuals behind us. Sonic Youth did that quite a bit in their touring, where we had a lot of like visuals behind us, and sometimes they were very random. We would sort of like sometimes just go out that day before a concert. We would film locally what was happening, and then we would broadcast that behind us, or we would like do things where we would have cameras that were facing the audience, and the audience was like staring back at themselves as we were playing, and so there was all that kind of activity. And things happen, and magic happens, where it's just like people come up to you afterwards, it's like, that was so cool, like when the train was coming through the tunnel and you were holding that really long note, and I was like, I had no idea the train was coming through the tunnel. That's wonderful that happened. Yeah.
Well, I think, and as an audience person, you can't help but connect those things. Whether you are changed by what's happening behind you or not, from the perspective of someone just out there and watching and hearing, they both make each element better and more powerful. And I love that music and visuals are just... And these visuals...
I mean, it creates sort of a... You know, it creates what they... You know, the whole sort of third mind concept of, the, you know, that William Rose talked about, like, working with Brian Giesen, and, like... And certainly the investigations that John Cage did with Merce Cunningham, where he was just sort of, like... You know, Cunningham was like, do not listen to Cage's music. Do not respond to it. Do the dance that I've choreographed. He's going to do this piece. And it's all within this point. The structure is time. And so these two things happen. They can happen separately, but they're happening together now. And the interplay is like, it's random, but it's like it creates this wholly other kind of like experience, you know. And it was
because
like
we can't help but put those things.
Yeah.
So try to make sense of
that's
them.
That's the beginning of sort of like modern interdisciplinary kind of like you know of collaborative work.
Well, and also like, the idea of time based. You know, I think it's one of the, you know, just pulled out that word when you're discussing it. You know, this idea that, you know, this project is really based on a kind of sequence of moments. You know, and these moments are volatile moments. And although I've been working on this for years, I have no idea what's really going to happen tomorrow night. I know there's a marching band from South Chicago that's playing Sun Ra. You know,
is that true?
I know there's the Black Monks of Mississippi that Theaster Gates has organized. You know Thurston and John will be there, and Mavis Staples. You know, we know there's other elements also, but at the same time, this project is also, you know, tapping into architecture and visual art. At the same time, you could go to this happening and ignore all the music and climb inside a nomadic sculpture made by the Brazilian artist Ernesto Neto into the soft space and just kind of fall into this glowing orange soft space where you could be inside an installation by the artist Urs Fischer where there's a smoke machine and a white yurt tent with my personal favorite that's because you like beds I hear and climb into this bed and do whatever you do. It's an installation with a manifesto.
You do what you want.
So I think, you know, it's been interesting, you know, and the idea that really this project is an artist driven project, you know. You know, everyone I've talked to about it has made it their own, has kind of taken it and claimed it. And, you know, we're on this train right now, we're going down these tracks. There's a drawing machine made by the artist Olafur Eliasson. This is a machine that he created from a studio in Berlin, which is literally taking the motion momentum of this train to create circular drawings with a ball of ink. And he's mapping the country, you know, as we're moving. And, you know, this will be his artwork that we can, you know, share and see. And we can see this strange cartography generated out of this, you know, industrial revolution train. You know, and it's those things, these kind of, you know, both the quiet and the loud, both the soft and the volatile moments of this that I think have been exceptional.
I want to talk about, maybe we can connect both of you together on this idea. You did a piece called Song One. It was beautiful projections of a film. I saw it at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington. The music was the Flamingos, was it?
I only have eyes for you,
one of the most beautiful songs on planet Earth. I went and saw it multiple times. And I loved watching like 11-year-olds and 72-year-olds enjoying the same piece at the same time. To have somebody who is very, very young and very, very old together. There was something I loved so much about that. So I love the welcoming nature of what your art did there at the Hirshhorn. And both of you have a very, I think, a sort of an abrasive side to you, which is not as welcoming. like the marching band welcomed me the other night to the opening of Station Station in New York, it opened me and in Pittsburgh, and then came No Age, which is a band that we might all love, but we have to all admit that not everybody's going to love, and No Age would be happy that everybody doesn't love that sound, right? That's part of what makes them make the sound they do. And I just want to talk for a minute about either public art or making music and how you relate to the audience. What do you want to have happen to people you thirst to make music to, you make art? What do you want them to walk away from when they see and encounter your work?
We don't
want
to be, I mean, there's no desire to be purposefully subversive, even though there's a certain pleasure principle in subversiveness.
Right.
But I think it has a lot more to do with, you know, you kind of, to me, it's like, it's always been wanting to sort of, like, do or be or express something that you as the audience would want to see. Like, when I would go see bands, it's like, okay, I want to do what I want to hear and see. I want to be that person that's doing it.
And so, what would that be?
All the clues that I got at a young age from things that I saw, I mean, it might have been the clues that came out of the mainstream, but mostly it was the underpinnings of the mainstream. So it was people like Captain Beefheart and the Stooges, you know, or Sun Ra, or, you know, or like more things that were, you know, as far as the genres of jazz and rock music, the things that were sort of more in the avant-garde tradition. Those were more curious, mm-hmm. were more interesting, and they kind of like they seem more surprising to me, and kind of, you know, in some sense more intellectual and kind of intriguing. So I wanted to be part of that. I wanted to be moving to New York and wanting to be in this lineage of like, you know, like the St. Mark's Poetry Project with like Allen Ginsberg and Ann Waldman and Gregory Corso, and that was like really, to me, that was the place to be, and I just sort of wanted to be involved with that. Those were the models, in a way. And those models lived really sort of... They existed really modestly, you know? I mean, you know, everybody talks about the Stooges and how significant a band that is. I mean,
they sold records.
They sold, like, 13 records, you know? I mean, it's just like...
Right. Yeah.
So, that was... That in itself is, it was sort of really inspiring.
And for you?
What was the question?
It's sort of... what do you... You do this thing. What do you hope people will get out of it, and do you feel your work is welcoming to a diverse bunch of people?
Well, I guess I don't really think too much about that.
Okay.
You know, I think you, for me, I make my work out of necessity. You know, there's an idea that's with me in me. It has to be exercised in a way. I have to kind of see it through a lot of times. And you know, I think projects. It's strange to talk about the process, because for me it's a little bit like a tree, and you often have kind of many branches that are moving, and you know, you kind of go out in one limb and you try to take that idea as far as it can go, and you know, at a certain point the idea is taking you,
right?
You're on the journey, and you know, the project is kind of pushing you to make decisions and to, you know, make it develop further and be more unique. You know, when you talk about Song One at the Hirshhorn, you know, that project was very much like it. It was a very singular idea. It was this idea that we'll take this one kind of perfect pop song from the 20s and we'll make it and remake it and remake it, and eventually, you know, kind of make this film where it passes from person to person through a nighttime city, and it becomes something which is almost just moving through the air. It's someone waiting for a public bus is almost whispering the lyrics. Someone on a cell phone is kind of just kind of talking at the cadence of the song, you know, so it becomes this kind of life force, this kind of landscape. And you know, I think in making that work, for example, you know, there's a certain point where, you know, I would just wake up at 4 a.m. and there was this necessity that we had to shoot that scene that day. We needed to find an older woman to sing this in a parking lot, you know. And, you know, I'd wake up and I'd drive around and I'd find someone who could do this. And we'd
amazing.
Bring them later in the day to the parking lot that we knew we'd need to shoot in and make it. And that was a scene, and that worked.
And I saw you, Doug, last night at the end of the show. And there you were, and the Kansas City Marching Cobras were in their ecstatic moment. And you were, too. You look 13, I'm just saying. but you were an audience member at that point. And do you care what people walk away with? I mean, there are two places. One is you do this thing because you have to do it because you're driven to do it. But in the end,
A project like Station to Station isn't just, you know, a project that I feel like I'm driven to do. It's, I feel like there's a necessity for it, you know, and the necessity is beyond any kind of idea or personal vision that I have. The necessity is that, you know, we live in a society that's moving and it's changing, and the creativity within it is changing. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like there is the kind of containers that are holding different sectors of the arts are becoming obsolete. And, you know, I think this project is kind of looking to experiment and maybe make a different kind of platform, a different kind of blueprint for, you know, how voices can be heard and things can exist. And, you know, the idea that, you know, Thurston's making this music while he's kind of feeling the rhythms of the tracks, that's one thing. But another radically different thing is, you know, working with a young artist like Kit Casanova in Minneapolis, who's, you know, she hasn't shown in museums, to my knowledge. She hasn't shown that much at all. But to me, she's making wonderful work. And, you know, if we can kind of use this project to kind of put a spotlight on what she's doing and elevate it and, you know, kind of create a larger collective conversation, you know, a discussion amongst all of us, to me, that's interesting. And then that becomes a necessity. You know, and I think there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of capitalism surrounding music and film, art, literature, all of these kind of aspects. And, you know, I'd like to see it open up, and I'd like to see the voices of the makers being heard, you know, in a more dynamic way. You know, so that's kind of my hope for this project.
Awesome. One song you'd go out on?
Well, I'd have to say I Only Have Eyes for You is a pretty good one.
Awesome. Fabulous.
I'm obsessed with Planet Caravan by Black Sabbath. I'm obsessed with learning a song.
I'll play them simultaneous and we'll see what happens.
Oh, you need to. It's a very slow, dreamy song.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's completely counterintuitive for them.
Thank you both.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
You bet.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. Shabam-shabam. Dibam-shabam. 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 Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. I only have eyes for you. But I can't see a thing in the sky. I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view, and I only have eyes.
my mind.